I know this sucks.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Dawson's Creek. Dawson's Creek. Season 5, Episode 17, Highway to Hell. Now, here
you go. Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Not Sarah, it's Adam Grossworth. Welcome back, Adam.
Hello. Thank you for having me for all these weeks.
We're delighted to have had you and so grateful you were able to fit us into your schedule. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's happening in the club. This Friday, April 10th, it's going to be Again With This 283. Let's watch Shannon Doherty host Saturday Night Live. That's season 19, episode 2, Shannon Doherty with Cypress Hill. A version of the episode is on Peacock, but it doesn't have the entire run of sketches. So we found a couple that were sort of lost. There's a spoof of The Real World Los Angeles on Reddit and The Salem Bitch Trials on Instagram. And of all of the stuff in this episode that they could scrub, and we discussed this in the club episode, but what's the problem with Salem Bitch Trials? It's perfectly fine.
Just the word Salem Bitch Trials like triggered an immediate sense memory from, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, there are plenty of aspects of this episode that led to Dave saying, wow, this is kind of cursed while we were watching it,
but that one.
For that and more, again with this podcast.com/club. All right, let's go. Starting with a B plot, and it really is a B, if not a C minus. Lily's first birthday isn't so happy for everyone. Remember a few episodes ago when Jen and Dawson had first gotten together and she started picking fights and creating tension so that he would be manipulated into dumping her on her schedule instead of surprising her with it? Well, after her encounter with Steve, the busted band guy last week, she's doing it again as Dawson asks her opinion on his gift of clothing for Lily's first birthday after he has finished wrapping it. Clip 2.
Why am I having such a hard time getting dressed? We're going to Cape Side for a one-year-old's birthday party. Who am I trying to impress?
You got me?
Do you mean I got you or you're stumped?
What?
I don't know. Getting dressed. Carry on.
Guy, if you can't see where this is going, honest to God.
Yeah, I sort of sympathize because she's being so oblique and weird about it. And So I'm mad because I think she's right and because I've been made to sympathize with Dawson and I don't want that.
Yeah, it's very annoying to be in this position. Grams then makes a whole production of knocking and announcing herself. And then she's surprised to find both Dawson and Jen dressed and yards apart in the bedroom. Joey is waiting at the door for Dawson. And Joey, I think after you've helped yourself to the laundry room brownies of a household you don't live in, it's okay to come in, wait in the foyer, weirdo. And when Grams has left again, clip 3.
Wow, I feel really old and boring all of a sudden.
Why, just because Grams didn't catch us in a compromising position?
Yes, exactly.
You know, not every morning has to begin with an embarrassing Grams encounter.
I know. We should go. Unless you want to,
I do. And I would, but I finally just got dressed. I'm just not in the mood to be separated from my outfit at this point.
Okay.
That was easy.
Excuse me?
Aren't you supposed to want to have sex with me at every opportunity?
I pretty much do. You just said you're not in the mood. And you've been cranky all morning, which kind of makes me not in the mood. So before this little fight you're trying to pick against fodder for your radio show, I'm going to go downstairs and answer the door.
I mean, he's seen through it. It's true. She's in one conversation been like, you know, we don't have to have sex all the time. Oh, what? You don't want to have sex all the time?
Yeah.
Like, he cannot win, clearly. And not to mention, how quick a quickie did you want him to throw you while one of your friends is standing outside of your house waiting for him to come and answer the door? Like, get a grip.
Yeah, we can't have two of those in the same episode.
Seriously. When Dawson goes, Jen mutters, smartass, and Dawson pops his head back in and clip 4.
Are you okay? Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, Dawson, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah, you're fine. You are just fine. he goes again and she takes off the sweater she had picked out because nothing here is right. Then Joey, downstairs, is there to tell Dawson she won't be coming to Capeside for the birthday party for reasons we will discuss in the A-plot. She at least brought a gift for him to bring on her behalf, so credit to Bessie for not raising a total clod, although how good a gift it is remains to be seen. We can discuss that when we get to it. Dawson and Joey part on perfectly friendly, normal terms, so they're fine again. Whatever that it hurts me to be around you thing was, it's fully over now. And then in the kitchen, Jen idly asks Jack if they got a new kind of orange juice. Apparently, yes. Some pulp instead of tons of pulp before she blurts clip 5.
I think I'm going to break up with Dawson.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's a good piece of business.
It's only spit take worthy because he was not in the previous scene with them, seeing how stiff and awkward it was. So Jack, yes, chokes on his Flutey Flakes. That's what we heard. Seconds before Dawson walks in. So this was something Jen had no compunction about saying to Jack when Dawson was feet away from her. I guess we can blame the auditory dead zones in TV characters' homes for that, where you can be in the same room and not hear a thing. Then Grams is pulling up on the Leary lawn. Dawson yelling about what a soiree Gail has made of a party Lily won't remember. It's not a soiree. It's daytime. Also, there's just like a few balloons around the edges of the yard. It's like not that big a deal, clearly. Gail admits it was just an excuse to get some old friends together and is hugging Dawson when some guy comes out of the house with a baby in his arms, correctly identifying Dawson, which I should hope so, as pictures are all over the house. And everyone is shocked silent by the introduction of Gail's new man, including Jen, who is clinging to Grams's arm like a baby who's making strange with a new person. Like, I don't know what they are doing with her character, but it's really, really bad. She's reverting to babyhood. But this is Gail's friend, Nathan, and his daughter, Haley. Gail realizes she forgot to pick up the cake. Jack volunteers himself and Jen to go get it. And when everyone else has gone inside for coffee, clip 6.
Well, you can't dump them now.
Jack, it's not funny.
No, it's not funny, Jen, which is why we're going to eat this cake together. So you can fill me in on what the hell is going on here.
It's a little funny.
It's a little funny.
You can't dump them now is exactly right. I mean, I'm sad that Jack is done having his own storylines, apparently, but he's good for comic relief.
He is. Like, I want more of him in this episode, as you say, but since his last storyline was kind of a bummer, sort of happy we're getting him as Casey's gay wingman and now spit takes with Jen. I'm here for it.
Yeah. So apparently Jen and Jack went all the way into town, got the cake, came back, set it uncovered on the yard platform thing, and then got around to what's going on with Jen and Dawson. Jack guesses it's just gotten old, but Jen thinks she leaped into the relationship too fast and was too focused on telling everyone who thought it was a bad idea how wrong they were. Clip 7.
I just feel like that existed in some parallel universe, and now it's just sort of...
safe.
If I admit that, then I am really going to seal the deal as a dysfunctional poster child. And it's not like Steve the Indie Rocker made me have any profound revelations about the meaning of love, but...
But you felt something.
No, I missed something. That thing where you meet somebody for the first time and you get to decide yes or no with only yourself in mind. And I don't want to be that girl that's upset that Saturday nights aren't more fun. I mean, Dawson doesn't deserve that. He's had enough already.
Jen, you should tell him that.
This is so normal. Like, I appreciate how they're pulling it back because this is just Jen being like, I'm meeting new people all the time. I don't want to be tied down, which is absolutely a normal thing for a college freshman to feel.
Yeah. And like the moment that they got into the relationship being, you know, sort of fraught for both of them and they fell back on something familiar and she threw him one, as Sarah would say. And like, I wish she were being less annoying about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it weren't Dawson. But yeah, this totally checks out. And
yeah.
I kind of appreciate that the writers were like, we're not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
But let's end it in a believable way.
Totally. And we said in the early episodes, like, it was working then, but it has run its course in what feels like a natural way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then inside, Nathan and Dawson are loitering in the kitchen doorways, sort of watching a gaggle of little kids sitting on the floor to draw on pieces of printer papers. So I guess one of Gail's new hobbies is cleaning crayon off your hardwood. You don't have kids do that. Get big pieces of butcher paper, put them at the table. This is weird, but Nathan's nicely trying to connect with Dawson, who is giving him nothing. Clip 8.
So, Dawson, your mom tells me you're enjoying your new film program in Boston. Yep.
Yeah.
I used to dabble a little bit in film when I was in Amherst. Nothing as advanced as you, believe me.
Nah, I'm just starting out.
What about that Matrix movie? I mean, they used a lot of that new digital technology, didn't they?
Hey, buddy.
Right.
Yeah, well, this one right here. I tell you, come here, Miss Lily Willy. You've got to keep an eye on you, right? Yeah. This one, I tell you, she gets in those crayons and her mama calls her a genius. I guess the old visual creative gene runs in everybody's blood in this family.
Excuse me for a minute.
Okay, tell us about Amherst.
If you went there and spent 4 years living there, you'd probably know that the H is silent or mostly silent.
Oh.
Which Charlie got right earlier in the episode. And I don't think it's clipped, but I was mm-hmm. like, oh, good job. And yeah, it's not Amherst. It's Amherst.
Okay, so, now I know.
Yeah. I definitely drew on recycled dot matrix printer paper that my mom would bring home from the office when I was a kid. And
but on the floor?
I feel like the table's worse because you're going to ruin the table, but I don't.
I guess. I don't know.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying I think I did it.
Sure. Parents, reach out. Tell us. Yeah. Tell us as if this is good parenting or not. I'm not sure Nathan is up for this, given all the noises he made leaning down to pick up a one-year-old. Like, that was this baby is probably, like, I don't know, 30 pounds. You should be able to heft that, I feel. But also, Dawson is being such a bitch. Like, I know you don't want to be friends with this guy. Obviously, this is awkward, but, like, give him more than one-word answers. Be in a conversation. You're not a child. But whatever. Nathan watches Lily gripping Nathan's shirt, which is what makes him have to exit the conversation, which is sad. You know, like, his dad's not coming back. Give Lily a chance to have some kind of paternal figure in her life. Presumably, Gail's not going to be single forever. She's never knew your dad. Like, give her a break.
Yeah.
When we see Dawson next, he has lured Jen out to a dock to say how freaked out he is that Gail is on what he calls the dating circuit. Jen thinks Dawson could prepare himself for Nathan or the possibility of a Nathan. And Dawson says he will, but right now he's just upset. Jen asks why he doesn't talk to Gail about it, and Dawson says right now he wants to talk to her. Jen says Gail's moving on, and when Dawson's like, moved on from my dad, Jen says Gail has moved on with her life. Dawson has to be at least a little happy for her. Clip 9.
People just need to breathe sometimes and act on their impulses. Your mom isn't going to always react the way that you think she should.
I know that. I'm not her keeper. I'm just saying I have a right to a reaction, don't I? Or maybe not.
I didn't say that you didn't.
No, but Jen, I'm trying to talk to you, and maybe you're trying to talk to me, but I feel like we're not having the same conversation.
You know what? I am just painting myself into a corner here.
No, I'm sorry. I'm really thrown. I don't mean to attack you.
You're not attacking me. I don't want to say something that I'm going to end up regretting.
Like what?
Nothing. I just want to go. I'm going to go.
Wait a minute. What?
Nothing, okay?
All right, you and I were talking, and then all of a sudden there was a continent between us. You want to tell me what's going on?
No.
Okay, well, I guess that's it.
Great. Bye.
Yeah. Dawson decides to live in the fantasy as Jen says she's going to go take a breather somewhere with Jack, and Dawson lets her go rehearse what actually she's going to say when she dumps him, I guess.
I guess. He's Dawsoning so hard. It's the sympathy I felt earlier has left, but, you know.
Well, yeah, he starts badly, but then when she's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to say here, he sort of pulls it back and is like, you're right, I'm sorry, I'm just lashing out and stuff. Like, he's definitely trying more than she is, which also says everything in this current situation. Much later, Dawson is leaning over Lily, whom I guess everyone just forgot about because it's nighttime and she's just fully asleep in her overalls and not pajamas. When Gail comes in with Joey's gift, she asks where Jen went. Dawson says she and Jack took a walk, adding that he and Jen fought about moving on. Gail, looking away, asks which side he was on. Dawson was against it, although the longer he looks at Lily, the less clear his reasons are. Gail thinks sometimes there aren't reasons. Choosing a new direction in life doesn't require a list. If the choice is moving on or trying to fit into the shell of your former self, it depends what you can live with. Dawson should go find Jen, he says. But Gail says no one is leaving tonight. Grams has passed out in the guest room. She taps the present, and when Dawson says it's from Joey, they agree it was strange not having her there. What was that you were just saying about either moving on or trying to fit into the shell of your former self? Just wondering. Gail's going to go clean up, and true to form, Dawson doesn't offer to do it for her or help, but he does say this, clip 10.
Hey, Mom.
I know. I should have told you. But honey, to be honest, I didn't know what to tell.
What I was going to say was it was nice tonight meeting your friend.
Thank you.
Would love to know what Nathan has to say about Dawson. He's really socially awkward. He didn't ask me one question about myself. He didn't catch when I pronounced it Amherst.
He was a real little shit.
Anyway, when she leaves, Dawson goes ahead and opens Joey's gift, which is a photo album she inscribes to Lily with just one L in the middle instead of two, which is how I've seen it spelled every other way, including by the actor who played her as a baby.
Huh.
The inscription wishes Lily years to be filled with memories like these, which turn out to be sketches Joey has made from various still shots of the show that she had, and one where Mitch and Gail were taking a photo, so her memory must be really good. And it's hilarious that now is the time the show remembered Joey likes to draw, when we haven't seen evidence of it since she did nothing at all with the wall Pacey got her.
It's very weird, and she's very good, which also wasn't really what we were getting when that was the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, especially the one of just Dawson holding Lily, looks as weird as he did in all of her shots, but the rest are good.
Sure. And, I mean, nobody would want this, especially Lily. Like, what? Why do I want this sketch of my 18 years older brother and his friends?
Yeah,
right. Who I don't know. Like, that's weird.
Anyway, that's the gift. Guess it cost her nothing, so, you know, she's making do what with the $500 she gave away in Downtown Crossing.
Yeah, the book itself looks kind of nice. There's there's one of just the pier, and then when they faded into the shot from the show, and Dawson is out there, and for a second I was like, oh, turn the page and it should be crying Dawson. Would be amazing.
Oh my God.
But we didn't get that, and I'm sad.
Sadly, no. Oh, what a missed opportunity. So Jack and Jen are sitting on the steps of the high school when Dawson rolls up. Jack quickly excuses himself to go visit the football field, leaving Dawson to sit next to Jen and ask what happened today. She claims she doesn't know. She knows quite well. Clip 11.
Tell me anything.
Okay. I got out of a cab 4 years ago, and you were there. And you looked so open and innocent and happy, and I thought to myself, you were the boy for me. And I kind of put everything into that. And, you know, I don't doubt for a minute that you're the best guy I'll know, and I wish that, you know, you'd just marry me.
Well, why are you doing this, Jen? I mean, there's a reason that this worked out in the first place. There's a reason that we got together. Isn't there?
There was.
Yeah.
It made sense, like we said at the time. Jen says she doesn't think this is just her. Clip 12.
It was right at the time.
We needed each other.
So what just happened, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Basically, yes, that's a wrap on Dawson and Jen, which they had their moment. He was her little pumpkin for a time, and I'm sorry that it seems like he's going to be drifting back towards Joey, but we'll yell about that when it happens, I guess.
Yeah. Good job, guys, and good job, writers, for making that actually sort of graceful so that I still like both these characters.
Yep. Onto the A-plot, a bad gig at a biker bar has a decent after-party at a motel. Joey and her new maxi coat wander into her dorm and are soon set upon by Charlie. I'll be generous and say maybe he didn't hear about her recent mugging because coming up behind someone unawares is really a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
And speaking of shitty, he's unfortunately been on the show long enough to have even worse hair than he started with. You can see this in the visual aids. There's some annoying, forgettable, time-filling banter about first and last name use, as though that's a Charlie affectation and not something all the Capesiders brought with them.
Well, I thought that's what she meant. I thought she was like, oh, you're getting the hang of this thing we all do.
Okay, I'll give it to them then. Joey finally tells him to get to the point, and he says he wants her to front his band at a gig upstate.
Nope. Massachusetts does not have an upstate.
Thank you.
I Googled this to fact check myself, and the first result was a Reddit thread of somebody asking for like a recommendation for whatever in upstate Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and like 10 replies not answering him, but being like, where are you from? So
wherever this gig is happening, not upstate, they're going to get paid $500 for it. It's going to be their first big break, which is why it's weird their singer quit now and like didn't hear about this and come back. But
right.
Charlie crams the set list into Joey's hand on her advice, taking off before she comes up with reasons to say no, and he makes some noises as he goes. Clip 13. I don't wanna wait. It had been a while. I don't know what the caca is.
No, the Hulu captions have it as haha, but it's still weird.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense.
Mm-mm. Another day, Audrey breaks off making out with Pacey in her room to say she's over the thrill of knowing Joey could walk in on them any second. They can't keep fooling around in there or in Pacey's car or the co-ed bathroom. He has to get an apartment. And I guess we're supposed to think he's been sleeping at the restaurant since the boat was sold, which was like many episodes ago.
Yeah, or like couch hopping, but mm-hmm. with what other friends?
Right.
Doesn't really track.
No. Pacey thought Audrey was about to dump him, but she says there's nothing to dump. He can totally fly out and be free. And learning that he's only experienced Audrey inhibited thus far, Pacey agrees that he definitely needs to get an apartment and is wandering out when Joey enters. Audrey gasping that Charlie just called, and apparently not for the first time. Audrey is so engaging on the phone that she's already heard all about the gig and wants to go. Joey whines that the gig is tonight, which means they would have to leave in an hour. Plus, she doesn't want to ride in the van with all the guys in the band. But Audrey says she and Charlie already worked everything out, adding clip 14.
Just relax and concentrate on your heroin chic thing.
Okay, I don't know about that.
Yeah. I want to believe, I know it's not this, but I want to believe it's Busy Phillips ad-libbing and throwing some shade at Katie Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know from her memoir that that's a thing that she would want to do, but also that the thing that they would not let her do.
Yes.
They were very attached to the script on this show.
Well, so. Given how overwritten it is, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that reference was years out of date. At that point, that's 2002, right. Is A. And B, you know, Joey had a run-in with a heroin addict like a few weeks ago.
Right.
Maybe don't say that. I don't know. So Joey adds that Charlie is smarmy, but Audrey says that even though she thinks correctly, that she is the one who brought the house down at the club the night of Joey's debut. Charlie asked Joey, which means he's probably into her, and Audrey approves. And if Joey does it, it'll be for the fun experience, not Charlie. Joey says, and Audrey's fine with that and hustles Joey over to Audrey's closet to pick out an outfit, which I guess they never did based on what we see Joey performing in later.
No, it's fully a mega day. Everyone's in the same clothes mm-hmm. for this entire episode in a way that makes absolutely no sense.
Yep. When we see Audrey next, she is talking Pacey into driving her and Joey to the gig, even though he can't stand Charlie, who is suddenly running up to them because the guys left in the van without him an hour ago while he was napping. So can he get a ride with them? And this also doesn't make any sense. When did he call?
No.
If like he called Audrey and then immediately fell into a nap?
Right. What was Joey and Audrey's backup plan?
Mm-hmm.
If Pacey said no,
yeah.
Why are they standing around waiting if not for Charlie?
Uh-huh.
Truly makes no sense at all. They are wearing coats, so at least they have acknowledged it's winter. But
yes.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm. So Pacey, already simmering with rage, asks what Charlie's plan was if he hadn't been able to get a lift with them. And this was pretty much it, Charlie says. Pacey says even that is an overstatement. Joey wearily heads off, continued bickering, telling Pacey they're going anyway. Before Pacey can say anything, Charlie assumes a yes, thanking him and getting into the car, I guess, to establish squatter's rights. Pacey mutters to Audrey that he's pretty sure Charlie planned this and is just stalking Joey. Audrey reminds him that he's saying this to his present love interest, but Pacey saw what Charlie did to Jen and doesn't want him to do it to another friend. Sure, let's go with that. Audrey decides to accept that, telling him to enjoy this as wacky road trip hijinks with a motley crew and their collective sexual tension. Add some pork rinds and Pacey's in, but Audrey has to keep Charlie away from him in the car. It's not like you even have a barrier like in a cab. He's just going to be there. You will be able to hear him. But in the car, Charlie chuckles. When Joey reluctantly asks what at, he says he dreamt this once, the two of them in the backseat of a car. Joey sternly says this backseat has no implications, and this is strictly business, and all his backseat transactions are, he says. She rolls her eyes again. It's a lot of eye rolling from Joey in this one. Then it's the first leg of the road trip. Audrey notes that they'll just be half an hour away from Salem, and Pacey jokes that he doesn't think she would be safe there. Is any part of that accurate?
I mean, it's a witch trials joke. So.
Oh, I know. I mean, geographically.
Sure. I mean, there's no upstate. So yeah, they must be going west. And
they're going across.
I guess. I've actually never been to Salem either. But yeah, no, sure, I can. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Joey asks Charlie the name of the place they're playing, and he teases her for referring to the band as We. And then he compliments the car and asks what it cost Pacey, who says where he's from. That kind of question is gauche. And seriously, what is the venue called? Well, it's the Drunk and the Dead, an awesome spot where the crowd really gets into it, according to Charlie. Joey suddenly looks nauseated, so Charlie tells her not to be worried. She claims she's not, so he guesses she's excited. Clip 15.
I'm not anything.
Yeah, that's what I keep saying, but the show keeps building you up anyway. Charlie assumes that Joey's already deciding on the drug that will be her downfall and fantasizing about trashing a hotel room, and in the front seat, Pacey seethes. And rightly so, Charlie is being really irritating.
Yeah.
Second leg of the road trip. Charlie knows Pacey wants to go easy on his classic car, but he needs to step on it. Pacey tries to ignore this, other than to say Charlie could have made better time on his motorcycle. That would be another plan, I guess. It's not like he even has his guitar. The guitar was apparently in the van, or his bass, I guess. Audrey intervenes, telling Charlie to shut up and Pacey that speeding up a little would be okay. And when Charlie offers to drive for Granny, Pacey pulls over and orders Charlie out of the car. They are leaving and Charlie's hitchhiking. Naturally, bickering escalates to shoving. Pacey goes so far as to take his watch off, give it to Audrey for safekeeping. What? She drags Pacey into the woods, claiming his masculine display got her all hot. And while they're gone, Joey eye rolls again, scolding Charlie for needling Pacey when he knows Pacey's not a fan. Clip 16.
Now why not be a good little backseat freeloader and just ignore him?
There are rules about these things.
God forbid you think for yourself.
What is that supposed to mean?
You obviously rub him the wrong way. I think you're probably his version of a chesty blonde.
Think I'm cute.
I say chesty blonde and you immediately think I'm hot for you. This is never gonna work.
No, but you're thinking about it.
Yeah. Hey, if you're good, maybe later we could stop for ice cream.
What? Huh? Is she stern or is she horny? Make up your mind.
Yeah, don't get ice cream on a road trip. I think we've established that.
Yes.
Yeah, and like it's so 2002, like his Joe Boxer waistband is showing.
Yep.
His t-shirt is a size too small. It's very, I guess I get how it might be working for her, but sure. It's not working for me. Let's put it that way.
No. And Charlie seems to think ice cream is a euphemism for something, which maybe it is, but that's when a panting Audrey comes back out of the woods, both hers and Pacey's clothes in disarray. So congrats to Audrey on the efficiency of her blowjob game, I guess.
So fast.
I mean, he is young, so, but still.
Sure.
Then we're at the Drunk and the Dead, a biker bar full of unsavory characters. You can see some of them in the visual aids. Joey hopes they're just stopping for directions, I guess, because she was not paying attention on the drive or when she walked in under the neon sign. But no, this is the venue. Charlie tells Joey they won't have time to rehearse. Obviously, like under what circumstances would they have had time to rehearse?
But why didn't they earlier sometime during this mega day?
Sure.
Ridiculous.
Joey panics, I guess because she thought they would. Charlie says it'll be fine. This crowd won't care so much what she sounds like. And after sarcastically suggesting Charlie could make a little money off Joey after the show, Pacey asks why Charlie would even bring Joey to a place like this. Charlie says she's a great performer. No. And he thought she would have fun. She'll have a little,
also, no.
I guess.
Why would you think that?
And Charlie would have fun watching her, right? Pacey says. Joey reminds them that she's right there just before Audrey pops out of the crowd and says a girl in the back is doing jailhouse tattoos for $10 and a shot. Then grabs Joey to go toughen her up. Pacey has his eye on Charlie, who doesn't know why, given the rest of the company, which is fair. It does look like a pretty rough place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, rough for TV, but still. In a back room, as Audrey does her eye makeup, Joey admits that she wants to win the crowd over and doesn't think she can. Audrey, who, as we said, made such a thing of getting Joey an outfit from her closet, which just turned out to be a white V-neck t-shirt and jeans, and who came herself in an Argyle cardigan to the rock show.
Okay, Elphaba.
She agrees that Joey doesn't do so well with things she doesn't do so well, but it's fine. She's probably never going to see any of these people again unless her tastes change.
It's a good line that you don't do so well with things you don't do so well. I appreciated that from
Audrey. I did too. And it's true.
Yeah, and I'm going to start using it. Very good.
Charlie pops in with a 5-minute warning, thank you, Five, and tells Joey she looks gorgeous. She looks the same, but now with mascara. And Audrey tells Joey she agreed to do this because she's curious. They briefly bicker about whether Joey likes Charlie until Joey has to go perform. So then Audrey finds Pacey in the crowd and tells him Joey has a little stage fright. Pacey thinks that makes sense since the front row is sharpening knives on their teeth. Audrey thought he loved dives like this. He does, sometimes, for himself, not for his friends. And then Charlie takes the mic to announce the woman who made Aggressive Mediocrity, which I guess is the band's name, which is better than North America, strive to be better men. But the crowd apparently doesn't watch the show, so this introduction means nothing to them. Clip 17.
Joey Potter.
Yeah!
She might have to take off her clothes, Pacey.
Dave broke in during that clip to text the chat. This is Betty Boop. I agree. She is so nasally.
That weird, was that a key change or just an octave? She does something that is not how the song normally goes.
No, she pitches it down an octave.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the good people at Hulu for cutting this in its entirety. Yeah, it's bad. I do think Aggressive Mediocrity featuring Joey Potter would actually be a great joke if the writers had, like, in joke for us, if the writers had bothered to make it, but they didn't. Like, she can carry a tune. Like, she's not terrible, but she's not right. Like, she's not good.
Yes. She can sing. She's not a singer.
Yeah. And there are songs that would suit her better. She is not going to sing any of them in this episode.
No. No. In fact, when we come back to the bar, Joey's struggling through Iran while Audrey looks pained and Pacey says it's like watching figure skaters fall. There's a lot of shots in the visual aids of Audrey looking like a supportive but heartbroken mother of Joey, like, just, you can do it, knowing she can't. It's
very
great.
Cute. But why would this bar even book this band to sing 80s new wave? Like, it just,
it makes no sense.
If this is the set list, and we know it is because we've heard them sing Jessie's Girl before, mm-hmm. why would they be here with any lead singer?
Yeah. So one guy yelling, "You suck," in the crowd is fully bald with a tonsure, aviator, eyeglasses, and a mustache. You can see him in the visual aids, too. I assume he's the bar's landlord and came down to add his voice to the chorus saying that she sucks. And credit to these patrons for having held out this long without throwing bottles at the stage, but a straw wrapper flies through and hits Pacey, which you can also see in the visual aids. Audrey hopefully says it looks like Charlie's cutting it short, but he is not. The band starts, "I hate myself for loving you," and Audrey gives them an encouraging but anxious smile. And they do it as a duet with no rehearsal at all. They just each instinctively know when to sing together and when to split up the part. Let's hear clip 18.
Midnight, Kidnum Town, where are you? You said you'd meet me now, it's 1:45. You know I'm hanging, but still want you.
Hey, Jack, it's a fat that's talking in town. I turn my back and you're messing around. I'm not really jealous, don't look like a clown. I think of you every night and day. You took my heart and you took my pride.
Okay, I don't believe Joey is off book for this song, first of all. I don't think it's in her repertoire. Secondly, the times they add Charlie to the audio mix don't line up with when we see him on mic. But I do think that's Chad Michael Murray's singing voice. So didn't they just have Charlie front the band instead of this business with Joey?
Yeah, they've definitely done something to his voice, too. And why didn't they do that to help Katie Holmes? Like, it's not even auto-tune, but there's like,
no,
it's clearly there's an effect on it and it sounds pretty good. So like, help her, please help her.
There's also so much of it, you guys. Clip 19. So embarrassing trying to be like Lita Ford. I'm humiliated for her. Like, all of her dancing is so dorky. Of course, when she finishes, she sticks her tongue through her teeth because that's her thing now. But she also, and you can see this in visual aids too, like stops and like puts both of her palms out in front of her like she just finished a choir performance. Like, you know how you see people holding their hands, their elbows out? She kind of does that.
Yeah, this really tells me that Katie Holmes did not have any close friends at this time. Because, like, I know that she had a lot of power on the show at this time, so she must have wanted this, and no one told her.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think it was probably her management was like, all of the other teen stars are doing pop albums, too. That should also be you. You're as good as anyone on Disney or Nickelodeon, and, like, she's not.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I just wish that, like, you know, she and Michelle were close enough for someone to be like, girl, no.
No, stop this.
No, say no.
But also, if this is the song that is going to win over the crowd, like, whoever they heard from that this is a great place where the audience really gets into it, like, I don't know, maybe make this your opener?
Yeah, well, like, again, like, who booked them into this biker bar to sing I Ran? Like, at least this song makes a little more sense. But also, like, to what end? Like, I know they're getting paid and it's a gig and that's fine. But, like, what, they're going to get word of mouth from this biker bar in the boonies.
Yeah, how is this a break? You would like, get out of playing around your school or getting onto your college radio station that Charlie works for.
Yeah, or doing a college tour or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's one of the dads in the band. Booked it. Maybe the drummer used to hang out here.
The angry bald guy in the crowd is like his brother, younger brother. After the show, Pacey watches Charlie talking to some fans, and bitches to Audrey that he's acting like he's Jimmy Page. And Audrey's like, it's 2002. She doesn't get why he's so rankled by Charlie. And Pacey says, finally, that when they were making Oliver's movie, he had to watch Charlie shove his tongue down Audrey's throat 40 times, right when the two of them were trying to work things out with whatever their relationship was going to be. So yes, every time he sees Charlie, he still wants to punch him. He accepts that it might make Pacey a bad guy and wishes he could impress Audrey by saying something self-assured, but he really cares and asks if they can please leave now and go get a burger or something. But that's the last thing she wants now, especially with a motel right across the street. And I will give Audrey a pass for being flattered by Pacey's possessiveness because she's young and dumb.
Yeah, that's Pacey.
And it's Pacey. And that's when Charlie joined them, and Pacey and Audrey are like, we're too tired to drive back now, aggressive yawn. And Joey's horrified at the thought of staying at the motel, but Charlie, watching the van leave without him again, presumably because his bandmates had to get back for their various daughters' weddings tomorrow, says he's wiped too, and Joey just has to lump it. And then she's cold enough to be wrapped in a blanket as she sits next to the pool that is filled and ready for swimmers after presumably midnight in Massachusetts in early April. Like, this pool would be empty or at the very least covered. Charlie joins her, saying he got them a room, and yes, they will be forced to share a bed. He asks if she's nervous, and she snorts that she's all set on what happens after the prom. He asks if she went to prom with Pacey, and when she says she did, he guesses it's weird for her to see him with her roommate. Joey says that's how they like to do things around here on a teen drama with a limited budget for guest cast. She does not add, reminding him that he's already fooled around with one of her other best friends. And Charlie then asks if Pacey's the only person she's ever had sex with, and she gets back on her high horse at his impertinence. He asks why they can't have a real conversation instead of bantering all the time. He doesn't know why she wouldn't want to make a new friend when all her other friends are sleeping together. This is Jack erasure, but if Charlie's saying he's willing to change that, I'm all for it. Let's see that, please.
I want better for Jack, but well, I'll take it.
He could throw him one. Who knows? Joey finally admits Pacey's the only guy she has had sex with, and clip 20.
I've only slept with two people, one in high school and then Jen.
Really? I feel really close to you right now.
You should. I don't tell a lot of people that.
What did you tell the girl that you were cheating on Jen with? That it didn't count?
Oh, right.
It's kind of endearing, actually. Seeing the tired routine meet its end before my very eyes.
God, I can't believe how much you threw off my game, Joey Potter.
Well, I try my best.
And I think I'm gonna call it a night. If you ever get cold or slightly curious about the room, that is. It's number 7.
Good night, Charlie.
Okay, again, Joey just got mugged. I don't think she should be so ready to hang out by herself very late at night across the street from a bar full of bikers she just barely won over. Like, if he knows about the mugging, he should be like, at least come inside, please.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I thought this was cute.
I did, too. They're not terrible. I mean, yeah. He is the star of the best movie of 2025, Freaky or Friday. So we know he's got the juice. But he's not quite done yet. Clip 21.
You know, you were really great tonight.
Thanks. You did kind of help me out.
No, you didn't need it. I just couldn't resist the urge.
To what?
To be close to something that amazing.
Donna in late era 90210 all over again. Like, every character doesn't have to affirm Joey at all times.
Yeah, except that they do.
Except that they do. So then Charlie and Pacey run into each other in the parking lot, Pacey meaningfully telling Charlie they're okay. He has a little paper bag Charlie assumes are provisions for the lady. And then Charlie notes Those are two of the highest maintenance women he's ever known, and somehow Pacey got with both of them. Pacey says high maintenance is another way of saying high quality, which it is not at all.
It isn't, but I also thought this was a really good line and very in character for Pacey. Yeah.
I thought it was sweet of him. Yeah. Charlie thinks is a nice way of looking at it. And he asks why they're starting to have a normal conversation suddenly. Pacey says he did a nice thing for Joey, and maybe Pacey got tired of hating Charlie so intensely. But if Charlie hurts Joey, Pacey will make him regret it forever. So Pacey only kind of hates Charlie now. Pacey says Charlie shouldn't take it personally. It's a long list. So Charlie wishes Pacey a good night, and Pacey goes to the pool, sitting next to Joey and asking if she's staying there all night. She was thinking about it for some reason. He makes sure she knows that he's got her back if Charlie tries anything, but Joey thinks she can handle him. And after seeing Joey lull the bar into submission, he guesses she could. She gives him her tonguey smile as he adds that she could probably break Charlie's heart. Joey thinks so too. Pacey's like, poor guy, and shuffles off to his room. Audrey groans about how long he was gone. Did he have to manufacture his own shoddy condoms himself? She asks, which from anyone else wouldn't work, but Busy Phillips is so good. She sells it. He reminds her that he's never been unprepared, and he didn't say he was going for condoms. He pulls out an unwrapped hostess cupcake and one birthday candle to celebrate their first night together without roommates or security guards. She blows out the candle. He guesses her wish involved four walls and an IKEA catalog. She thought of him as more of a Restoration Hardware type. He knew she was classy, he says, but she assures him she's not, and they get to it. And then we're back with Joey, letting herself into room 7. Lucky number 7, or is it? It's not. Charlie, the smooth-talking gigolo, is asleep and barely stirs when she comes in, takes off her coat, and lies down next to him, smiling to herself. I have to ask, why is everyone in this episode sleeping in their jeans? First Lily, now Joey. At least take off your pants. That's uncomfortable. You're going to roll over on your buckle and give yourself a bruise. But that's the episode. Let's close with our MVP. Jack? Jack did not put a foot wrong.
It's true. I kind of got to give it to Audrey again. I'm so repetitive. I'm sorry, but like, she's such a supportive friend.
Mm-hmm.
She diffuses the situation with Pacey.
She does.
However she diffused it, I team Audrey all the way.
Least valuable player. Joey. So tiresome.
Whoever's selling loose hostess cupcakes in Worcester is really something weird. No, it's got to be Lily for me. Who wants to go to a one-year-old's birthday party?
Yeah.
She's useless. She hasn't helped the situation at all.
She doesn't. It wasn't her call, though.
True.
It's not like she invited everyone. She's blameless.
She's the reason that they're all suffering through this terrible looking party. I've got to give it to her.
Fair enough. She at least looked very cute. She's in a red and white gingham shirt and overalls. She's pretty adorable.
She's a cute baby. Yeah.
Next time! Oliver's movie is finished, which he seems to think means it's in a fit state, not just for a screening, but for Boston Weekly's film critic Amy Lloyd, Meredith Salinger, to attend. Jen doesn't get to enjoy her newly single life because she's got to deal with Joey's questions about Charlie and Gramps' new boyfriend Clifton and romantic interest for Jen from Oliver. Good God.
Oh, no.
Elsewhere, Audrey gets the brilliant idea of telling Pacey how many guys she slept with, which will probably be totally chill. What is actually totally chill is our website, againwiththispodcast.com. It's the place to find links to our visual aids for every episode, links to buy a very special 90210 book, which Sarah and I wrote, and tons of information on why you should join our paid subscribers and how to do it. The perks are plentiful, and you can get them at any level of support. Speaking of support, Adam Grossworth, your support in Sarah's absence has been invaluable. Please tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet.
I have a podcast called Muppeturgy, where we have completed recapping The Muppet Show and are now discussing adjacent nonsense, such as Dick Cavett meets ABBA. And we have an episode of The Cher Show coming up, which I'm really excited about. Amazing. And you can find me as a person on various social media at Adam807.
I'm Tara Ariano, and even though I did not take off my clothes, I hope you still paid attention. Our special guest co-host is Adam Grossworth, and he hates himself for loving you. And our producer is David T. Cole, who's concentrating on his heroin chic thing. From all of us and the absent Sarah D. Bunting, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time.
Yeah, well, you get the point.